to Australia now and our correspondent Bernard Keane of Crikey.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Crikey Cobber, have you scored a free trade deal with the UK?
We have. I love these free trade deals because there is nothing that gets Australian journalists more excited other than leadership contests, and all for no reason. None of the trade deals that Australia has done over the last 20-odd years have actually yielded any particular benefits for Australia, and in fact, in some cases, have actually proven negative. But we don't like to talk about that sort of thing. We just get very excited about trade deals. And now we've got one with the UK, the first post-Brexit deal. Although even this one, I mean, this is a little bit unusual in that even the people who were spruiking it are admitting that it's not actually going to generate much in the way of additional economic growth, and it's going to take a very long time to get going. I think Australian beef farmers will be sort of waiting until the mid-2030s until they can actually get full access to the British market, because British farmers, like our farmers, and I imagine like your farmers as well, very eager to have their interests protected. So, there'll be a lot of hoopla over this deal. It will not produce any particular benefits, because the history of these things is when you go back and revisit them a few years later, it shows that nothing much has actually been achieved, unless, of course, it's a free trade deal with China. We had one of those back in 2015, and boy, hasn't that done us the world of good.
It's interesting. New Zealand farmers were a little nervous about this too, because your deal sets the precedent really for ours, and again, they were pretty disappointed at how long it was going to take to phase out some of those tariffs.
It's a very low bar, isn't it? So there's if they're hoping for some sort of ratchet effect from Australia, well, the thing about the Australian government's approach to free trade deals is they just want to get a deal signed. I mean, that's how we ended up with a pretty bodgy deal with China, which, of course, ended up not being worth the paper it was written on anyway. But Tony Abbott just wanted a free trade deal because he didn't really have anything else on his agenda. And I think Scott Morrison has taken the same approach. Get a free trade deal, you're going to wave that around as evidence that you've actually got an economic agenda. But it doesn't make much of a difference. And even for sectors that are affected, you know, if you're a beef farmer, look, all these things do is actually just move trade around, divert trade from one country to another. That's the conclusion of economists and independent government bodies here. So, yes, I'm afraid if to the extent that we could have helped out New Zealand farmers there, I don't think we've done much.
Now, what's happened with the Biden-Morrison pull-aside or bilateral not happening?
Well, that was a very interesting outcome of the G7 or G7 Plus meeting. Australia was there sort of as the plus bit of the G7, obviously, and it was touted by the government and a lot of our press gallery journalists here as a Scott Morrison's first sort of opportunity to have a one-on-one meeting with Joe Biden. And that turned out not to be the case. Apparently, at Joe Biden's suggestion, Boris Johnson sat in on that meeting, so Scott Morrison didn't get to have a one-on-one. Now, you know, these things are partly about optics and presentation, but it seems pretty clear that the Biden administration remembers the fact that Scott Morrison actually campaigned with Donald Trump when Scott Morrison was in the United States last year. That's not the sort of thing you casually forget. And I suspect the fact that Scott Morrison has been such a laggard, Australia is such a laggard on climate action, that fed into the mix as well. But it seems that the very close relationship that Scott Morrison had with Donald Trump is not quite been replicated yet with the new administration. I'm sure in time things will smooth out, but I think it just reflects the fact that if you go campaigning with a president in the United States, don't expect the man who beats him to forget that in a moment.
Now, there's a very controversial, was it an asylum seeker story or case? Please tell me more about it.
Yeah, so this is about the Marukapan family, a Tamil family that came to Australia a number of years ago, and got a bridging visa, which enabled them to live in the community. So they lived in a small Queensland farming town, Billawila, But in 2018, their application for a permanent visa was rejected and they were going to be deported. Now, this is a family that when they arrived, it was a couple. They've since had a couple of kids. They've been born in Australia. And this has become, I guess, the most high-profile case in relation to this government's sort of asylum seeker policies, which, you know, by and large have been sort of very successful. Now, I'm not, you know, I don't reflexively support the right of anyone who comes to Australia by boat, you know, as having the right to stay here. But the treatment of this family has just been almost ostentatiously punitive. So they've challenged the rejection of their visa, permanent visa claim in court. While that's been going on, they were taken, removed from that Queensland town and sent to Christmas Island. They've been living in detention there now for a number of years. The reason that it's blown up in the last couple of weeks is that one of the kids got sick, one of the little girls got sick, and she had to be flown to Perth for medical treatment. And as is so often the case with these things, an image of her, of a child, as you know, the blunt end of the of refugee policies, got wide circulation and really, I think, crystallised a lot of concern about the way the government's treated this family. The government's sort of logic has always been, look, if they allow these people to stay, that's just going to encourage would-be refugees, would-be asylum seekers from around the world to get back in boats again and come to Australia, and we'll be instantly back in the situation we were back in sort of 2013 when tens of thousands of people were coming to Australia by boat, hundreds of people were dying. That sort of logic really doesn't tend to hold up anymore. I mean, one thing that this government used to boast about a lot is that it stopped the boats, meaning the refugee boats, and that's actually something they were pretty successful at. The idea that I think allowing a couple and their daughters that had already been living in Australia for an extended period to stay was going to somehow spark, to open the floodgates was a difficult argument to mount, but they've continued to mount that. But that image of that little girl lying in a bed in hospital, separated from her parents, they were still back on Christmas Island, thousands of kilometres away, or at least several hundred kilometres away. That image really compelled the government to make some sort of move, and that's what it's done. It's going to allow them to stay in community detention in Perth until the court process, winds its way to a conclusion. But they're still trying basically to deport this family on the basis that they shouldn't be given refugee status, and that's where this is a temporary fix for a long-term problem for the government. I think if they ever do actually seek to deport this family, it's going to engender exactly the same kind of reaction as we've had over the last few days.
Thank you, Bernard Keane of Cracky.com, our Australia correspondent.